Welcome to the good, the bad, and the ugly of self-storage, your go-to podcast for mastering the self-storage industry. Join host Michael Cunningham and his son Dylan Cunningham as they share insider knowledge, firsthand experiences, and practical advice. Each episode, they dive into real stories from lucrative deals and strategic renovations to the challenges and pitfalls that await. Whether you're a seasoned operator or new to the industry, learn how to succeed, avoid common traps, and seize great opportunities. Tune in to hear their journey, lessons learned, and secrets to making your storage facility a success. Unlock the potential of self-storage with us.
Welcome to the good, bad, and ugly of self-storage. This is episode one of our brand new podcast. I'm Dylan Cunningham, your host, and I'm excited to take you on a journey through the world of self-storage, a business full of opportunities, surprises, and some hard-earned lessons. This podcast is all about sharing the real stories behind self-storage, the wins, the challenges, and the unexpected hurdles that come with owning, building, and investing in storage facilities. But I'm not doing this alone. Joining me today is someone who knows this business inside and out, my dad, Mike Cunningham. So Dad, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Hey, good morning. My name's Mike, and yeah, I am a owner, operator, builder, broker in the self-storage industry. I've been at this since 2007, and through those times, we've seen a lot, some good, some bad, and obviously some ugly. And so we're here to help out, try to help other people learn from our mistakes and some of the things that went really well for us. And so please, I hope you join us on this adventure into the good, the bad, and the ugly of self-storage.
That's awesome. I think a great way to start off this podcast for our very first episode, I'd like you to share your story, Dad. You've been in this business for over 15 years, almost 20 years now. So let's go back to the beginning. What first got you into self-storage business back in 2007?
Yeah, that's a good question. My initial introduction into the self-storage industry was in 2005. I went to the ISS show in Las Vegas, and what really brought me to that show was, we'll have to go back a little bit in time and kind of unpack the journey to get to that point. My first business was the auto upholstery business, and it was a great stepping stone into allowing me the ability to start to buy real estate. And I was in that business for 12 years, from 1986 to 1987 to 1999, and I was able to acquire, I think, roughly 8 single-family homes and 1 duplex as income property. My primary goal was always to create a passive income, a way that would create a future for our family to have the finer things in life, but really at the essence of it, the ability to work when I wanted to work, you know, having financial freedom. And passive income was, in my opinion at the time, and still is to this day, the best vehicle for that. So, you know, along that way, learning about running single family homes as a business, and what it takes, and the cliches about toilets and tenants is real. We are from California, Northern California in particular, and the laws in California for tenants always seem to lean towards the tenant, not the landlord, even though the landlord takes on all the risk. And so, if anybody's out there, and I'm hoping there's plenty of people out there that have owned rental property, and if you've ever had to go through an eviction process and an unlawful detainer, it is it's cumbersome and costly and timely. So Always looking for something different. And as time progressed, we started buying different asset classes of real estate. Inevitably sold the business, the upholstery business in 1999. And that's when I really started to jump into how can I really elevate this income in terms of passive income as quickly as possible. And so I got my real estate license and started selling traditional real estate and doing fix and flippers. And that was extremely gratifying. But at the end of the day, there is a tremendous amount of risk that goes into that, as well as short-term capital gains. So it's a great income, but it's not a great future for passive income.
Interesting.
Yeah. So as we moved on during those years, our first real commercial property was a strip center, and it was about 12,000 square feet. Had some commercial tenants and national brands. It was a triple net leased property. Our biggest tenant, which was about 6,000 square foot, was the IRS. And they were not triple net. That was a gross lease. And I think they had like 6 years left on their lease. They had originally signed a 10-year with a 10-year option. And inevitably, to our surprise, they moved out. And that property, that space sat vacant for almost 2 years. Very difficult to lease back up. And the learning lesson there was that when you get into office and retail space is tenant improvements. And we were asked multiple times to come up with large sums of money for tenant improvements for a tenant to move in. The one that I remember is it was a Montessori school that wanted to go into that space, and they were going to need like $350,000 in tenant improvements. Now, we were going to be able to build that into the lease, but that was upfront money. And so, again, you know, we're always looking for the best real estate investment opportunity. And I know there's probably tons of people that have done incredibly well in retail and office space, but this was just another thing that kind of said, hey, there's got to be something a little bit better out there. And so our next purchase was a medical building. And that was also a triple net lease. And we had 10-year leases on the tenants when we bought the property. And one of the large tenants in the beginning ended up filing bankruptcy. And we ended up losing out on that tenant. And again, very difficult to lease up that space. It was built specifically for them. And we did end up having to put some TI improvements in it for the new tenant to move in. But, you know, again, thinking that the triple net lease was the answer to the best passive income, you know, you hear the story, mailbox money. And unfortunately for us, in both of these cases, these were good investments. I wouldn't consider them great investments.
When you say triple net lease, can you explain to the viewers a little bit about what that is and why that's so important for a passive income?
Yeah, so there's different leases that a tenant can sign. What, you know, gross leases, there's a single net, double net, and triple net. And so the breakdown there is that on a triple net lease, the tenant is responsible for taxes, insurance, and deferred maintenance. And on a double net, it would be, you know, taxes and insurance. On a single net, it might just be the taxes. So it's all kind of tailored to what the needs are. And so when you see, you know, some of these big national brands, you know, and they don't want to own the real estate, Walgreens apparently is one of the best out there. That would be, you know, an A-class tenant, and they would typically not own the real estate, and those would be triple net leases, and they would sign typically a long-term lease, 15 to 20-year lease. And those cap rates are, you know, traditionally lower cap rates just because of the security and the consistency of the income, almost like an annuity. But in any case, you know, we always were kind of driven towards getting triple net leases where we felt like the responsibility on our behalf as the landlord was going to be very minimal, that the responsibilities of maintaining the property, paying the taxes, insurance were all going to be on the tenant itself.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Let's kind of, you know, redirect and get back on track. And really, what was your first storage facility like? You know, back in 2007, what were the major challenges? What humps did you have to overcome to, you know, put yourself out there and redirect your career into self-storage?
Yeah, so kind of back to finishing up that first question. Inevitably, in 2005, I went to my, again, in search of kind of the perfect passive income. I went to the ISS show in Las Vegas, and it was very eye-opening. I really had an opportunity to talk to a lot of people, you know, went to, they had the open table classes or round table classes, and really got a good sense of what the industry was all about. And everyone was very open about giving information about the self-storage industry. And that was exciting. No one was holding back. And so when I got back from that, I really dove in and started really looking actively for, at the time, I thought I was going to buy something that was a storage facility that was already built and running and operating. Unfortunately, we really struggled trying to find something like that in Northern California where we were living. And so inevitably, we settled on purchasing 10 acres up north. It was about a four-hour drive from where we were living. And this property was already entitled and permits approved for 107,000 square foot storage facility. It had climate control, indoor, outdoor, covered parking, outdoor parking. It was a beautiful, large development. So yeah, that kind of what was the original property kind of set us up and the embarkment of moving forward in the self-storage industry. So we bought the property in 2006. We had it built. We were not the builders behind that in 2007. And we began operating it in 2008, right before the mortgage meltdown, or some people call it the Great Recession. And so those brought on their own challenges. Unfortunately, the bank that we had the loan with, which was the construction loan, failed during this time, and they went under FDIC receivership. And, inevitably, through a long battle, we lost that property. And I would say that's the bad of the self-storage industry. I think it's something that we'll spend some time on, and maybe have a specific podcast on this entire adventure. There was a lot to it, and it was a long, drawn-out battle. But, you know, the positive is that we've been able to recover from that. We're still in the industry. We have a portfolio that we manage of properties in Northern California and our self-storage brokerage. And we love this industry and, you know, hoping to pass it on to, you know, you, Dylan, and your sister, and generations to come. And so we're here to really educate the listener on the things that have went really well for us, but also the things that haven't went so well for us. So hope to have you guys follow us throughout this journey, and we'll uncover some of the best and some of the worst.
Man, that is just brutal. Losing that first property must have just been a total heartbreak. How were you able to jump back into it? And, you know, was that one of the biggest mistakes you made early on? What would you do differently next time?
Yeah, so many things unpacked there. First off, you know, this was in, you know, obviously we purchased the property in 2006, building it in 07. The economy was just booming along at that point. And we just didn't have the foresight that there would be such a big correction. You know, I think we were going to be able to sustain a, you know, a 10, 15, 20% correction. But this correction, especially in the market that we were in, was like a 50% correction. And we just weren't able to recover. So the big mistakes were over-leveraged, maybe a little too optimistic in terms of, you know, going out and building something of that size. At the end of the day, I would highly recommend starting small and maybe not even building as your first property. But so over-leverage, too big, and then really not really factoring in the market vulnerability at that moment in time and how much of an impact that might be. So those are kind of the three big takeaways for me. And again, I think this would be great for a future podcast to really unpack it.
I totally agree. Thank you for sharing that story. Now, moving along, how do you think the industry has changed since you started back in 2007?
Yeah, quite a bit. I mean, again, I think it's still a really great industry in terms of people sharing knowledge. It just seems, you know, like one of the things that's most refreshing about the industry. But the big changes, and thank God that part hasn't changed, but the big changes to me have been technology. Technology's really made a big impact on our business in terms of how we manage on a day-to-day basis. You know, is this the ability to kind of minimize employees, which kind of, you know, originally was one of the factors that, you know, brought me into this industry. Is the first business being an auto upholstery business, that's a very highly skilled business. There's very little vocation for it. And so training someone to do this job was, you know, took years. And, you know, at the end of the day, the work pool was minimal and the scalability was very difficult. So, you know, you could have a really, you know, good upholstery shop, but can you have 15 of them? It was a really difficult proposition. And so that's why we were, you know, initially looking for something that, you know, minimal employees. Do we need skillful managers? We absolutely do. But most of it's pretty trainable in a very short period of time, not like something highly skilled like an auto upholsterer. And so technology's been a big factor in how we've been able to scale. And I think it's really helped this industry as a whole. So I'd say that's probably one of the big ones. The other one is information. When we got started, there just wasn't a lot of information out there. And now via these podcasts and YouTube videos and, you know, the ISS show, and there's just so much information. And there's a couple of guys out there at this point that are just doing a fabulous job just educating people about the self-storage industry. So I'd say that there is a lot of education, which has brought a lot of competition too. So there's, you know, good and bad to that. And, you know, I always think that competition is a good thing and it keeps the market super healthy. So anyway, I would say that those are the big takeaways right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you look at how many employees you had just in that first small auto upholstery business and you compare it to how many employees you have now, and it's probably a pretty similar number, which is surprising because of how much more you're able to do with the same amount of employees.
Yeah, that's it's one of the really the big things that was initially driving us, other than we were really looking for the ultimate passive income. And I wouldn't say this is passive income, and I think that's misleading. I mean, this is a business, and you do have to run it. But you know, there are the technology at this point has really allowed us to put systems in place that, you know, doesn't require your attention every minute, every day. You know, you could really kind of oversee this from, you know, that global position. So that's what's really made it exciting for us.
Awesome. I wanted to ask, did you have any crazy, ugly self-storage stories from your experience so far? I mean, this is the good, the bad, and the ugly of self-storage. So I feel like if we start low, maybe we'll get to some better stories along the way. But I wanted to start with one crazy, ugly story from your experience.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything crazy, ugly. I mean, there's, you know, everyone in the self-storage business has experienced, you know, someone trying to sleep on the property or live in their unit. You know, there's always, you know, the rodent problem. We've seen cockroach problems. When I think back on it, I would say one of the ugliest was in the first facility. I was walking the property one morning and I noticed that there was liquid or water outside one of the roll-up doors. And this was in the middle of summer, and so there was no rainfall or no precipitation, and so it sparked my attention. So these particular units, this property was so big, and we were working so diligently to get it leased up. We were getting very creative, and I think there's a lot we can unpack in future episodes on this kind of stuff. But we made some of the units into these. This particular unit was had an exterior roll-up door, but it was attached on the backside to a hallway. And we set it up to where there was a small man door in the hallway that led into a smaller unit, which was like a 5x10. And we put electricity and, back then, phone lines. That was a thing, oddly enough. And the goal here was trying to attract small businesses, typically service businesses like a plumber or an electrician, and they could use the little front space as a small office, and then the larger 10x20 or 10x30 as kind of their warehouse. And we had quite a few. It was working pretty well, but the problem with that does is it leaves the door open. These tenants had larger access hours, and you're gonna get bad actors in that. And anyway, I'm walking by in the morning and I see this liquid outside the door. So I start snooping around, and I come around to the backside, and it's locked. I walk back around to the front where the roll-up door was, and at that point I noticed there wasn't a lock on it, but I tried to roll it up and it was being held down. And so I start listening intently, and I could hear something faintly. And so I knew at that point somebody was inside this unit. And so I, basically said, hey, you're going to have to open this door and get in. We got to get in there. So inevitably, they opened the door. It was two guys. They had their Barca loungers. They had a TV set up, and they were playing video games, beer cans everywhere. It was their man cave. They had set this up for their man cave. And so I think when we went back and looked, they said they were a nonprofit, and they had their whole story on why they needed the access and what kind of business they were. But again, if you're not, you really have to do your spot checks on these things, and find out who's the good actors and the bad actors, because if, like I said, if there's a will, there's a way.
Right. Well, that is pretty ugly, in my opinion. Moving on, I think a good question to kind of end your side of this story would be, what advice would you give someone looking to buy or develop a self-storage facility today in this market, with everything going on, with your experience? I think the viewers would love to know from someone who has over 20, almost 20 years of experience, what advice would you give someone?
Yeah, I would say, so we're focused in Northern California, and all the markets are going to be a little bit different. High barriers to entry in Northern California, development, and we're going to get into future podcasts talking about development and those hurdles that go with that. There's a lot of reward, but there's a lot of risk with that. I would say educate initially, and I think that the ability to do that is never been better with, these podcasts, with, there's a few people out there that are really trying to educate people on buying and purchasing self-storage facilities. But I would say first, do as much education as possible. Not to the point of, paralysis. And I see that a lot too, where people they want to know everything. At some point, you really do just need to jump in and, learn from doing. And there's going to be some mistakes along the way. And I think that's, kind of part of the whole process. But, trying to minimize your risk in that, I would say jumping in would not be developing, in my opinion. Jumping in would be trying to find a small storage facility that potentially could be even manless with the technology that we have today. Going into some of these tertiary markets and looking for a smaller property that, the big guys aren't going to be looking at anyway. It doesn't fall into their criteria, and you're going to have more opportunity to buy something like that. It's typically going to be a mom-pop ownership at this point. And so the goal would be, in my opinion, again, trying to find something that maybe is a bit mismanaged, maybe needs a bit of deferred maintenance, is not too big. You're not over leveraging, and you know, potentially even something that you didn't initially need, like full time management there. Maybe some part time management where it's semi manless. You know, that would be some solid advice for somebody kind of just getting into the business.
Mm. Awesome. Well, I'm sure the viewers definitely appreciated that.
Yeah, well, I'd like to kind of turn this around a little bit. I've been doing all the talking, and you know, Dylan, it warms my heart to see you coming into the business and you getting an opportunity to firsthand to really understand this business. I mean, a little bit of a background. Dylan got his BA in finance at the San Diego State, and he came right to work for us and managed one of our facilities for a little over a year, really just kind of cutting his teeth on understanding how self-storage runs from the ground up. And currently, we're in a development phase. We're developing almost 80,000 square feet of self-storage, and he's kind of switched hats. He's out in the field, you know, learning the construction side of it from the ground up. He's a recent recipient of his real estate license, and he's helping in the brokerage as well. And so, you know, he's getting the full picture of the self-storage industry. And, you know, I think it would be interesting to kind of get his perspective of, you know, how he sees the market and coming into this, what's, you know, probably been the biggest eye-opener to him in the self-storage business.
That's a great question. I've been working for my dad, you know, in and out of high school and college, but right after college, you know, jumped right into it. And being able to see what it's like managing one of the properties is pretty eye-opening. I mean, as a kid, I really just assumed people looking for storage was, you know, people that are either just moving or downsizing. But something that really surprised me, and you know, this was right when I got involved, was just how many different types of people needed storage. I saw that everyone from, you know, teachers storing classroom supplies to dental practices keeping extra equipment to, you know, even college students like me, between semesters, they all use storage. It really doesn't matter if someone is financially well off or struggling. At some point, it seems like nearly everyone finds themselves needing extra space. And so, you know, growing up, I really just thought of it as simply renting out a space, a unit. But now I see how much, you know, customer service and marketing and even local community engagement play a role in this industry. It's pretty cool. The industry really isn't just about square footage. It's about trust, you know, security, and meeting people's needs during major life transitions. So I would say that was probably one of the most surprising things entering this business was, yeah, just the market.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, what you've always said in the beginning is that, you know, self-storage, you have to have empathy for, you know, our customers. And most people are in some sort of transitional phase of their life. And at that moment in time, the last thing they need is, you know, being hassled on renting a storage. And we always have trained our managers to be empathetic at that time and, you know, be great listeners, really listen to what their needs are at that moment in time. And I think you had, you know, firsthand experience. That's why it was so awesome for you to kind of cut your teeth, go into this business by being at that front desk and really hearing the needs of the customers.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, some people even describe it as being a part-time therapist. I've heard some of our other property managers use that term, and you know, it just gives me a chuckle because they are not wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the majority of our properties all have full-time managers, and the size of them and the intricacies of our properties have really led us to have that. And, you know, we're kind of on the old school end of it. And that's why, you know, bringing, you know, the youth in, this fresh blood with Dylan, trying to kind of look at the market differently and his perspective on social media and branding. This is where I think having these fresh set of eyes come in is really going to help our industry. And I kind of wanted to touch on that and ask him, Dylan, what do you believe, social media and branding, what is your understanding? How do you think that these tools are really going to change the way we approach self-storage in the future?
Yeah, I love that question. I feel like the answer is kind of endless. I mean, social media and branding can just transform self-storage from being seen as a boring necessity to really gauging customer first experience. Growing up, I knew what my dad did. I didn't think it was rocket science, but I feel like when you put in some of these tools like video content and influencer partnerships and localized digital media marketing, it's something that you could truly build stronger relationships with customers before they even need self-storage. I mean, I feel like it also kind of allows for some education and storytelling, kind of like what we're doing right now. I mean, this podcast is a basis for some, social media and branding. We're just trying to educate and inform our viewers what it's like being in the industry. It's really not like we're trying to sell anything. It's just informing. And so I think showcasing how storage can solve these real problems in people's lives is really what's important. So yeah, I think, again, it's an endless amount of progress that social media and branding can truly achieve in the self-storage industry.
Yeah, and that's why we're so excited to have, kind of a new set of eyes on the company and on the brand as a whole. And hopefully we can continue to, share what's working for us moving forward there. And I know the big hot topic at this point is the manless self-storage. And again, we do have some properties that are in, I would consider, rural areas or tertiary markets that potentially could benefit from a manless self-storage. And, we've got the tools in place. Our website allows people to rent online, and we're using a CRM that other stores could pick up the phone for other stores. And so I think the tools are there. We just haven't, leaped into it just yet. And so hopefully in the future we'll give that a shot and we can share those experiences with everybody through this podcast. If you were going to think about, the future of self-storage, Dylan, what excites you?
Yeah, that's another good question. I think the combination of technology and customer experience really excites me the most. And you kind of just touched base on it right there. We're on track or potentially on track to have some of these manless facilities. And, as of right now, we're using the DaVinci locks, which is on path to a manless facility. So from smart units with app-based access to automated leasing and AI-driven customer service, the industry is just evolving so rapidly. And it's really exciting.
AI is going to be a big deal. I think it really is.
It's huge. I mean, that this is my generation. So I love seeing where it's going and how the self-storage industry is going to react and adapt to all of these technical advances. I also see more opportunities for eco-friendly storage solutions. We're big on solar. One of the most exciting things is how the industry is evolving toward, these eco-friendly storage solutions. There's the growing demand for solar-powered facilities, energy-efficient designs, and, even sustainable building materials. We're in the field right now, and every day it's like you can come up with something new on how to save costs and hopefully, make the world a better place at the same time. So I feel like those are with technology and,
you know, eco-friendly solutions for self-storage, which can ultimately reduce costs and the environmental impact. I think those are some main concepts on what really truly excites me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. We have been big on solar here in California, in particular Northern California. Solar's been a big deal, and our power company here is Pacific Gas and Electric, and they've been through three programs. There was something called NEM1, and now we're into NEM3. And you know, it's not as great of a deal at this point. And I think that would be a great podcast as well, kind of how we solared up all of our properties, and you know, what's the impact been? What was the cost that derived from it, and would we do it again? And so I think that'll be another great future podcast we'll talk about. But it just to kind of close this up a little bit, I was kind of thinking about this. If you were to describe self-storage in one word, you know, based on your now time in storage, what would it be?
Interesting.
And why? And why, actually?
let's think. You know, I think the word essential comes to mind for many reasons. I think because storage really isn't just a luxury, it's a necessity for so many people. I mean, I kind of talked about this with the first question you asked me. I mean, what surprised me was that so many people needed storage. So, you know, it really is essential. It's a necessity for many people at different stages of their life. You know, whether someone's moving, running a business, decluttering, or just going through a major life event, storage provides a practical, reliable solution when space becomes a challenge. So I think, you know, I think the word essential really stands out to me. And, you know, that might be a little biased since I'm fresh into the industry, but I think that's a great word, and it's a positive word, and it gets me excited for the future.
Awesome.
So I think that's a wrap for the very first episode. Dad, thanks for sharing your journey. It's clear there's a lot more to self-storage than people realize, and we've really only just scratched the surface.
Hey, I'm excited, Dylan. We can't wait to share, you know, all of the lessons and the good and the bad and the ugly that we've experienced over the years. So moving forward, look forward to us producing more podcasts that kind of go over all of these things. We're currently in a big construction phase. We're going to talk about investment strategies, you know, marketing hacks that we've done over the years. We've done some really fun stuff in marketing that's super cost effective and worked really well for us. So, hey, look forward and stay tuned for some future episodes.
If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe, share, and leave us a comment. If you got any questions or ideas for future topics, let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you the next time on The Good,
The Bad,
and The Ugly of Self-Storage.
Thanks for tuning in to The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly of Self-Storage. We hope you found today's episode valuable. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like us, leave a review, and share it with others. For more tips and updates, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also listen to us on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, let's unlock the potential of self-storage together.